soon reveal his identity. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into today's broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad to have you on board today as we start the program. We wanted to talk today on the Knowing the Truth radio program about public education. Public education, of course, is a big subject. There's a lot of different elements to it, and a lot is happening currently in the issue of public education. I've done so on the broadcast at other times before. I had a documentary that was put out some time ago, and I had the producer for the documentary on the broadcast with me talking about public education. His name was Colin Gunn, and Colin Gunn had produced a documentary called Indoctrination. And he had basically in his documentary that he put together was making the case that poor results were coming out of the public education system, and that Christians in particular should be looking elsewhere for the education of their children. And so we dealt with that aspect of the story on previous broadcasts, but on today's broadcast I want to pick up a similar theme, just some of the data that is coming in concerning public education is not very good. We just had this highlighted in the news media because of the strike that took place in Chicago. And in that strike, you know, there was a lot of discussion about teacher salaries. There was a lot of discussion about teacher unions and the role that they play. There was a lot of discussion about test scores and about, really, this was at the core of the discussion, was accountability. How can we build in some level of accountability into education, public school education? The teachers there in Chicago won that debate. Apparently, they were able to achieve some of their objectives in the strike that they put on, and also to fend off any attempts to really put into the system more accountability. So I don't know if it was a win for students per se, but it was a win for the teachers union, especially the teachers union right there in Chicago. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but here to help us talk about this issue is from Heritage Foundation, I should mention. This is the article that I'm working with this morning, and the resources that I've pulled, a lot of them come from the Heritage Foundation this morning. But joining us this morning is Rachel Sheffield. She focuses on policy issues related to welfare, marriage and family, and education as a research assistant for the DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation. Rachel, it's a pleasure to have you on the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on the show today. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. It's our pleasure. I wanted to ask you, Rachel, about an article that was written by Lindsay Burke just recently. It was posted out on Heritage, their blog site, for our listeners' sake, called The Foundry. And out at the Foundry, the headline of this particular story says this. It says, SAT scores are at a historical low, and education spending is at a historical high. So we've got low test scores, and we've got high cost of education. So obviously, this is a problem. I wanted to see if we could start the program off by getting you to summarize some of the some of the points that we see in this article?
Well, basically, yeah, like you said, SAT scores are, this year's SAT scores are among the nation's, are at a 40-year low in reading. So basically we've seen a 34-point decline since 1972 in reading scores. So this is, clearly something not to be too excited about, to be concerned about. Unfortunately, it kind of continues this trend that we've been seeing, basically, of graduation rates that haven't increased at all since the 1970s, and achievement rates that have stayed basically flat as well since that time, since the 1970s. Despite all the government spending, despite all the, all the money that's been poured into trying to improve education, so. That's basically the gist of this story.
Let me read a quote that's in the story. As you mentioned, it's a 40-year low for SAT scores among national test takers. And the Washington Post reported it this way. It said, reading scores on the SAT for high school classes of 2012 reached a four-decade low, putting a punctuation mark on a gradual decline in the ability of college-bound teens to read passages and to answer questions about sentence structure, vocabulary, and the meaning of college entrance exams. So this is a huge issue, right, with this. If they're having trouble just being able to read at the level that is necessary for college entrance, there's not a whole lot of good outcome that we should be expecting then once they enter into college, since being able to read and understand what you're reading is such a vital part of their college education, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that, these skills, having reading skills, it's vitally important to a student's success in college. And so, as we see these, scores not improving and declining in this case on the SAT, it's, this certainly, puts the future of our students at risk. And so, we really need to be asking the questions, what do we do to improve this? I mean, if, clearly, maintaining the status quo, pouring more dollars into that hasn't worked. And so we really need to start looking at ways of how we actually make changes, how we actually help students improve.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to get to. What is the solution to this problem? There have been some solutions that have been offered, but they seem to be finding much opposition from the teachers' unions and from some politicians as well. This particular announcement about the 34-point drop since 1972 in SAT scores came on the just at the same period of time where President Obama was actually filming a segment for the NBC's Education Nation. Tell us a little bit about what that filming was about and where he stands on a couple of these issues.
Right. So President Obama was on Education Nation, which is a, it's a week-long series that NBC does on, education in the state of education in the United States. And, basically, while the president does, talks favorably about, things like charter schools and he unfortunately still supports, the unions and they unfortunately stand in the way of much needed reforms like school choice that are, that we have seen helping students and things like, teacher evaluation reform. So, it's mostly just, unfortunately, basically propping up the failed status quo.
Yeah, the president, while he seems to throw a bone, if I could use that phrase, talking about this, but he seems to show a little bit of support or throw a bone towards charter schools and those types of things. He then says that they're under-resourced. No Child Left Behind had a good intentions, but it was under-resourced. But when we actually look at the facts, when we say, well, wait a second, under-resourced, remember for our listening audience that the headline that I read here was the SAT scores have gone down, but the actual funding for public education has gone way up. And so when we look and he says that they're under-resourced, what do you mean by that? We look and we see that $160 billion that has been spent on this program since 1965, and No Child Left Behind specifically is far from being under-resourced, and $25 billion, 600-page law that has been receiving significant amounts of new spending every decade since it was passed nearly a half century ago. And so it doesn't really hold water to say, or I guess the question needs to be asked, how much resources are we talking about? How much money are we actually talking about that is needed in order to do the job that we want done, i.e. the education of our children? Is that a fair assessment?
Right, exactly. I mean, right, it seems like it's always the, you know, calling for more education spending, and yet, you know, as, you know, yes, as you point out, we spend, you know, $25 billion on No Child Left Behind, for Head Start, since that program was enacted, we've poured $160 billion into that program, and yet we see these types of results of students not improving, and yet the continual cry from Washington is that we need to pour more money into these programs, and, you know, that's what we've seen. We've seen throughout the decades, I mean, you know, President Obama has spent, for example, he spent nearly twice as much in one term on education as President Bush spent in two terms, and President Bush was he spent plenty. So we continue to see, it's the same solutions of more money, and yet we know that that is not what is going to improve our schools. We've seen that over and over.
Now the host of the program that he was on, host by the name of Savannah Guthrie. She asked the president, kind of pressed him on the issue of education unions, and she asked this question. Some people think President Obama gets so much support from teachers' unions that he can't possibly have an honest conversation about what they're doing, whether it's right or wrong. Can you really say that teachers' unions aren't slowing the pace of reform? This was the question that she put to him. You know, can you really say that honestly? It seems like if you question or critique teachers at all, especially teacher unions, that right away many people begin to bristle at the notion of that and won't even allow the question basically to be asked. But here's how President Obama responded. He said, you know, I just get really frustrated when I hear teacher bashing as evidence of reform. Now, that wasn't teacher bashing. That was just simply saying, can you really say the teachers' unions aren't slowing the pace of reform? If we can't even measure what we're managing with some sort of an evaluation, how are we possibly going to be able to correct the problem if we're not even allowed to measure somehow what the issue is and where we need to marshal the forces and fix the problem? Would you agree?
Right. I mean, the president basically, you know, was not addressing this issue of teachers' unions and just automatically turned it into, you know, teacher bashing, which certainly it is not. Teachers' unions and teachers, it's a very different, very different when we're, you know, when we're actually talking about, you know, what they're standing for here. So, right, I mean, you know, just as we've seen in Chicago, the teachers' unions, you know, were blocking reform, so it would actually be really, quite frankly, in the best interests of teachers. It would allow those teachers you know, to be evaluated, and for those who, you know, for those who are the best performing, to be able to receive, you know, to be awarded for their good teaching. And, you know, that's going to ensure that you have the best teachers in the classrooms for students. I mean, these are, you know, student-centered approaches to really improving education. And, you know, the unions push back against those types of reforms. So it's very much, you know, it's very much just, you know, teachers' unions are not standing for the types of reforms that are necessary to help our children succeed.
Mm. During that Chicago teacher strike, Heritage had a blog post that talked about teacher strike is unthinkable and intolerable was the title of it. I posted a couple of quotes out of that article, but it basically said this, that in the quotes that I put out, that the union president called the strike education reform. So the strike itself is what he sees as being, or she sees, I think, as being the education reform itself. A couple of facts about what was taking place. The teachers' union was seeking a 30% raise in pay. A 30% raise in pay would bring up the average salary of those teachers to $88,000 a year. And that was even though the current dropout rate was 40% of the students were dropping out. And at the real issue, as I pointed out before, was that the union was refusing any attempts in order to get rid of bad teachers. And this is why, you know, of course, the whole idea of collective bargaining, I think, doesn't belong in government at all. We kind of have our hands tied in order to be able to correct these problems. I should mention, too, that 88K that they were seeking, that did not include benefits, and it came at a time when the average person that's paying that salary, i.e. the taxpayer in Chicago, I think the average pay that they make is half of that amount, about $40,000-$45,000 per year was the average pay. So the people paying the salary, remember, they get the summer off as well, so it's not even a year-round job. But they get the people paying that are making half of that amount of money. So this idea about, you know, more money is what is needed in order to fix this problem doesn't seem to square with what we see when we look at the facts in this situation. Hey, did you get a chance, Rachel, to see or to hear anything about that movie that's being released? I think it's actually coming out tomorrow. It's called Won't Back Down, and it seems to be a film. although it's a movie, you know, it's based on actual facts. It's, you know, they talk about a story, but they've made it, you know, took some liberty there with the story. But anyways, it's based on what's called the Parent Trigger Law, and it's coming out in films tomorrow. Have you heard anything about this?
I have heard about it, yes. I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but looking forward to seeing it. And, yeah, I think this is just, you know, I know that it gets into the issue of school choice and just, and you know, really showing, just demonstrating how parents are wanting better education for their children. They're wanting to have, you know, options. And that is, you know, we've been seeing that actually take place around the nation. We've seen more states implement school choice policies in the last few years particularly. And so I think this movie is, you know, it's movies like this, and we've seen, you know, Waiting for Superman 2 years ago, and just how just the state of education in the United States, and just how hungry parents are for a good education for their children, and to be able to have, be able to choose a school that best fits their child's needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's what this film is about. I'm going to play a clip from it after the break for our listeners' sake. I'll let you know that so you can hear some more about this. You also mentioned Waiting for Superman. I think it was a slightly different message in that film, that documentary. That was promoting the idea of charter schools and just how the charter schools are getting just so much, so many better results than we're seeing in the typical public education system. And if I understand the charter school correctly, basically it's privatizing. So let's just use this word, non-union teachers that are part of the teaching of the children in the public school system. It's still kind of owned by the public school, but then the actual education is privatized. Is that correct, Rachel?
Yeah, it's right. It's still considered a public school, but it's less restricted, or there's more freedom to kind of implement more freedom over the schools than a traditional public school.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, charter schools we've seen them grow significantly over the last several years, and other policies too, like private school choice, have been really catching fire. In places like Louisiana, we've recently seen that, where, mm-hmm. 70% of Louisiana students are, estimated to be eligible for, private school choice. And we've seen Indiana with, a similarly, huge expansion of private school choice. And other states as well, Arizona, implementing these policies to give parents greater control over their child's education.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you where this, the idea of school choice movement, where it was at. What's the status of it at this moment? I know it's an uphill battle because, as we've been talking about, these teacher unions are very powerful. We saw that. I mean, they basically had to back down there in Chicago. They don't have the money to pay the pensions and the higher rate and all of those types of things. Chicago is hemorrhaging funds. They're in the red big time, and yet they tried to do something here about this school teacher contracts and tried unsuccessfully. They couldn't do it, and so they basically had to settle with them. I don't think they got the full $88,000, but they got some a raise, and they, most importantly, they were able to hold off any sort of greater accountability for what's taking place. And I understand that accountability issue is not as clear, maybe. I don't know if just looking at test scores is the only way to do that. I think that there's a couple other ideas there on the table that need to be thought about. But I think it is primarily just some way, some mechanism of being able to manage this tremendous amount of money that is being spent on public education with such poor results in this country. Somebody once said, I remember when I was in IT management, they said you can't manage what you can't measure. And here's the problem. We don't have a good measurement of what's taking place among the teachers, and so we need a measurement there to figure that out, and then we can go from there. Well, Rachel, I want to thank you for taking the time out today to visit with us and to speak with us about this important issue. We really appreciate you doing that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Okay. That was Rachel Sheffield. And Rachel Sheffield, as I mentioned at the top of the broadcast, she focuses on policy issues related to welfare. She also talks about marriage and family education as a research assistant for the DeVos Center. When we come back from the break, I want to play a couple clips for you. I want to play a clip out of Chicago that talked about some of those teacher union issues that I was talking about. You don't need to hear it in my words. I'm going to let you hear it in their own words. We're going to hear from the former general counsel for the National Education Association and also the president of the Chicago Teacher Union. I think you're going to find this pretty interesting.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Would you please welcome the pride of Alexandria, Indiana, your host, Bill Gaither.
Hey, thanks, Bill, and welcome to Homecoming Radio. Do we ever have a great show for you? you can hear some of the great Christian music you grew up with Bill Gaither's Homecoming Radio, heard every Sunday evening at 5 o'clock on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
Some of America's bravest warriors are returning home wounded. Here's one of them.
My name is Norberto Lara. I served for 11 years in the United States Army. While I was on a combat patrol in Baqaba, Iraq, a rocket-propelled grenade took my arm off at the shoulder. When I came home, I felt alone. My family was around me, but I couldn't talk to them about what I'd seen and what I'd done. I remember just thinking, man, the way I am right now, I don't want to live. I was discharged from the Army, and I've been working with the Wounded Warrior Project since 2007. You don't have to be severely wounded to be with the Wounded Warrior Project. We do have a lot of guys that have post-traumatic stress disorder. Being able to share your story, I guess it kind of helps you wrap your mind around what did happen over there. Just because you have left the military doesn't mean your life is over. Because when these guys are coming home, I'm kind of leading and training them. Instead of for combat, I'm leading and training them to heal. If I come away with anything from Wounded Warrior Project, it's them giving my life back. My name is Norby, and yes, I do suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, but I'm okay.
Don't suffer in silence. Contact WoundedWarriorProject.org.
The Citadel is back in Charleston this Saturday, September 29th, resuming Southern Conference play in a key matchup against the Chattanooga Mocs for a 6 p.m. kickoff. The Citadel is 3-1 overall and 2-0 in league play, looking to knock off the Mocs for the fifth time in the last seven seasons. This is your exclusive local home for Bulldogs football in Greenville. Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
Brought to you in part by Greer Flooring Center, Just Right Auto Repair, and IPS Packaging.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the program today. We're talking about the problems of public education, and more specifically looking at just how teachers' unions have grown so big and so powerful that they're actually part of the problem of trying to reform the public education system. And this is something certainly that we should be concerned about. The results coming out are absolutely terrible. We were just talking about with Rachel from Heritage Organization just a few moments ago, and we were talking about how the SAT scores are at a 40-year low, while at the same time the spending is at a 40-year high. And so we're spending more money but getting worse results. Now, obviously, in any sort of management position, you would then want to be able to gauge what are you getting for your money, put in some sort of system to be able to measure where the problem is and then address the problem and fix it. That's just makes common sense, right? Well, the problem is that the teachers' unions, as we saw in Chicago, and it's actually much wider than that, it's across the country, they bristle against, in fact, that's putting it mildly, they aggressively advocate against any sort of system to be able to measure what's going on in the classroom, a way of weeding out bad teachers. And so the results are bad. We don't have a mechanism in place to fix that. And the call is just for we need more money. We need more money thrown into the situation. If we just throw more money at it, then this will solve the situation. Well, let me let you hear for yourself what the teachers' unions are saying. This is a clip. I got it from out on heritage.org's website. And I will go through. You're going to hear a number of statements that are made. And then afterwards, I will recount some of the important statements that are made and tell you who made them. And I'll tell you right up front, one of the statements you'll hear throughout this little clip is being made by the former general counsel for the National Education of Association. He'll be the one that'll be talking repeatedly throughout the clip, talking about the NEA and its affiliates are effective advocates because, and then he'll tell you that. The other prominent person that you'll hear in this clip is Karen Lewis. Karen is the president of the Chicago Teachers Union. This is a bit of a montage, but she'll be talking about a few things here as well. She likens the teacher strike to the Arab Spring taking place in Chicago, among other things. And then there'll be a couple other people, and I'll explain that when we come back from hearing the clip. Listen to this.
Thousands of public school teachers in Chicago, the nation's third largest school district, are on strike.
The teachers' message is the same, and their resolve has not diminished.
We have a strong union. We have a lot of solidarity, and I trust Karen Lewis and the union to do the right thing by us.
In fact, it's hard to stand out here at some point and think about the fact that my students are falling behind, that they're sitting at home. This isn't where I want to be. This is just where I have to be in order to be an advocate for them in the long run.
NEA and its affiliates are such effective advocates. It is not because of our creative ideas.
People are impressed. Let me tell you, I spent those years smoking lots of weed, self-medicating.
It is not because of the merit of our positions.
This is sort of like an Arab Spring here in Chicago right now.
It is not because we care about children.
Isn't the same way that, like, you know, the Civil War was fought? Yes, a lot of people died, but it stopped slavery. You see what I'm saying?
And it is not because we have a vision of a great public school for every child.
Why shouldn't that person, those parents, have the same options to be able to get the kid out of a failing school and into one that works? Some of these parents can afford to take the kids out of
a failing school. Life's not always fair, and I'm sorry about that.
NEA and its affiliates are effective advocates because we have power.
Hold on. I'm sorry. They're kids here. I wasn't supposed to say that, right? Too late.
Well, there you have it. A couple of the comments that were in there. Let me recount a couple that were stated because, obviously, you're just listening to the audio of it. And as you watch the video for yourself, that clip, then it puts the names of who's speaking while the statements are being made. Well, let me just give you a couple of these, and these are in their own words. This was all done during the recent teacher strike, and these were some of the principal players in that strike that were speaking. The first one that we heard from there was Bob Chanlin. He was the former general counsel for the National Education Association. He says this: the NEA, the National Education Association, and its affiliates are such effective advocates, not because of our creative ideas and not because of the merit of our positions, and it's not because we care about children, and it's not because we have a vision of great public schools for every child. NEA and its affiliates are effective advocates because we have power. That's his idea. And boy, do they have power. They have power to, they tell their teachers how to vote and who to support. And boy, you know, people are, politicians are very reticent not to upset the teachers' unions. Here we even saw it, they were just recently in Chicago there, of course, with the Democratic governor there, who was Rahm Emanuel, who was the chief of staff for President Obama, but even he was not able to control this at all, knowing that they don't have any money. It didn't matter who was there. The union has power, and he gave in the end to their demands. And, you know, the kids weren't going to school. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of kids that were outside of school. And the parents, of course, they're held hostage because they've got jobs that they need to go to. And the children, they're expecting to be in school. Now they've got to take off of their jobs. So it cost people a tremendous amount of money while this was going on. And what happened during that protest, by the way, is not only did the teachers' union, initially they weren't getting the response as quickly as they wanted from the government, from the governor and the state government. And so what they did is not only were the teachers' unions protesting, but other unions from other sectors, not from education, but other unions from other sectors joined in the protests. And other unions from other sectors threatened to join the protest. In other words, They were saying, you know, okay, if having just hundreds of thousands of kids out of school is not enough to hold you hostage to our demands, then let's add more to it. We'll put, I don't remember exactly which unions it were, but we'll put the garbage folks, garbage collectors. They'll go on strike with us because they're sympathetic to our cause. So now your garbage won't get picked up. And now other things, other civil responsibilities of the civil government, because of this unions that are there, they were then going to join in and be sympathetic to the teachers union to put more pressure on the government, the state government, to settle this issue. So I think you can see, you know, just what happens here. This is, you know, gun to the head diplomacy. Basically, the governments have no option but to give in to these demands that are made, and they are demands. That's a type of word that you would use in a hostage type situation, I know, but that's what it's like. Listen to what the you heard Karen Lewis speak there. She's actually the president of the Chicago Teachers Union. And she was the one who responded there that it is sort of like the Arab Spring in Chicago right now. So in the middle of this, she likened it to the chaos. We all saw how that turned out, right? Where you go ahead, now we've got then the Arab Spring started there in Egypt. Mubarak was taken out and now has been replaced by the Muslim Brotherhood. And we've all seen the results of that, where they're attacking the U.S. Embassy and tearing it down. But this is what she felt was a good analogy of what was taking place in the teacher's strike. She was also the one there that was speaking when she said people are not impressed. It doesn't give us what she was referring to before that, but I think that she was talking about herself and some of her credentials. You know, people are not impressed. But then she goes on to say, but let me tell you, this is her speaking at this event, a public event. I spent those years smoking lots of weed. This is the president of the teachers union, self-medicating to laughter, right, that's taking place. Oh, there are kids here. And then she says, so I wasn't supposed to say that, right? Well, too late. You know, so she looks out in the audience, apparently, well, there's children here. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Tongue-in-cheek, she doesn't really mean it. And then just fluffs it off too late. But she's talking about her years in school and, you know, oh, well, I spent most of those years smoking pot, smoking weed, and then self-medicating. Like, it's all a big joke about what's taking place. There's 40% of the students that are in that school system are failing, are dropping out, and here it is, a big joke about, yeah, well, I just smoke pot most of my years in school anyways, and then they get by with it during this time as well. There were a couple other comments that were made by people associated with this. You heard one by Jesse Sharkey. He is the vice president of the Chicago Teachers Union. So he works right there with Karen Lewis, who made those comments. Well, he, not to be outdone, he decides then to compare the teacher strike to it that is going on with ending slavery. She compares it to the Arab Spring, and he considers it to be like ending slavery during this time. A little bit of hyperbole going on here, don't you think? A little bit of these people think of themselves a little more highly than they ought. He says this during that clip. He says, well, you know, it's like the Civil War. Yes, a lot of people died, but it stopped slavery. So he was saying, yeah, there's a lot of negative results associated with this, but we're going to get what we want. And what getting what we want in this situation, whether or not it's good for the state, whether or not it's good for Chicago, whether or not it's good for the country, whether or not it's good for the children, what matters is it good for the teachers and the teachers' unions. And so he says that we will, we stop slavery, is his words here. Now, right away, you know, there's always a sense in which we need to say, that we're not talking about good teachers. I understand that. But we're talking about a systemic problem that we have here now in public education. While it's true that we're not talking about every teacher in that system, we are saying that the look at the numbers that were out there protesting, we're certainly talking about a lot of teachers that have bought into this whole system there. You might say, well, they're at the mercy of the unions. I agree with that, that the unions hold a tremendous amount of sway over them. But this is, we've got to do something about this situation. They are ruining education in this country. And I know the Christians, as Christians, we'll talk about this in a few moments. We've got a little bit different solution to the problem. Let me tell you that there was another fella that you heard speak during this little clip. His name is Vincent Gordon, and Vincent is the executive director of the New Jersey Education Association. So this just gives you a little sense. I've been talking mostly about Chicago, lest you say, well, wait a second, this is that's just Chicago. You know, there's a lot of things in Chicago we don't agree with. You know, this is the land of, well, this is where President Barack Obama came from, and Rahm Emanuel, and Blago, remember Blago, and that whole fiasco that took place with Blagojevich and what was taking place there. I mean, a lot takes place in Chicago that is certainly raises a lot of eyebrows. So you might say, well, that was just in Chicago. And so you're just describing something that really doesn't relate. Well, this is a statement then that was made by the executive director of New Jersey Education Association. And by the way, you know, he's making these comments about, well, life just isn't fair, right? Guess what? His salary is over $500,000 per year in New Jersey. Now, you know that New Jersey has a bunch of problems as well with the education system. Governor Chris Christie, no-nonsense governor, came in there and straightened out many of the problems. But they got many more problems. I can't remember how many of their previous governors ended up in the slammer. You know, Elliot Spitzer was there, right, before that. He was the one who was caught with the call girls and those types of things, spending money on prostitution and all of these types of things. And the ones before him were no better than that. And so it's just the corruption is just startling that takes place in a few of these areas. Well, here's this person, this Vincent Gordon, executive director of the New Jersey Education Association. When asked, why shouldn't those parents have the same option to be able to get their kids out of a failing school and into one that works? So he's being asked, why can't we allow for school choice? And this is one way that this can be fixed. Why can't we do that? His response was, well, life is not always fair, and I'm sorry about that. You know, and so I don't care about what is taking place. This is the way it is, and there's absolutely nothing that you can do about it. Well, there's where the difference is. There's where the rub comes in. What is there that we can do about this? Well, there's a couple of options on the table. One, I had talked about a couple of films. We mentioned Waiting for Superman. If you didn't get a chance to see that, you may want to see it. But it's a pro-charter school documentary, so you can watch that documentary. You can just Google it, and it'll come right up. You can see that documentary for yourself, Waiting for Superman. Talking about, you know, the expectation that somebody's going to come in and fix this thing in the public school system. But year after year after year after year, we have the same issues over and over again, and it's not getting fixed. And one of the ways to fix this is to privatize, i.e. get rid of the teachers' union in this group, you know, get them out of the equation, privatize the education of the schools. And so we've done this with some charter schools, charter school movement across the country, and the results coming back from the charter schools are much better. I don't know if it's fixed the problem completely, but it is certainly much better results having it done by the charter schools rather than by the actual public education. So that's one solution. A second solution is that people and I are talking about something called the parent trigger law. And just a basic explanation of the parent trigger law is this, that it was a law that was passed, I think in California is where it was first passed. And basically it said that if your child is in a failing school system and the schooling system is just habitually having very low turnout and very poor results in the training of the children, that if you could get enough of the parents in that school, more than half of the parents, so 51%, if you could get them to agree with you that the school itself is the problem and the administration at the school is the problem, you could then be enabled by the government to take certain steps, steps including tossing out the entire administration at the school and starting over again, tossing out all of the teachers and then starting from scratch in order to rebuild the teachers there in order to get better results. Well, a movie has now been made about this parent-triggered law. It's based upon that. And the film is actually called Won't Back Down. And the tagline says this: if you can't beat the system, change it. And this is actually launching in theaters tomorrow. I tried to get the producer to come on the program. I wasn't able to get in touch with the right people there in time to get him on the program today. But they have a website. The website is www.wbdtoolkit.com. That's WBD, and that WBD stands for Won't Back Down. So WBD Toolkit, that's all one word, .com, and you can go out there in order to watch the trailer and find out information about how you can promote this. But again, the gist of it is that it is a story about two women who decide to enact this parent trigger. Let's play a clip. This is the trailer from the film, and you can hear some of what's taking place for yourself.
Try it again.
I can't.
Cody, you can do it. Come on.
I don't get it, Mom.
I can't wait. With 10,000 studies about how being poor affects education, I can tell you being poor sucks and my kid can't read. What happened? Where is she?
Excuse me.
Maya!
I punished her because she does not follow rules.
Are you insane?
I'm gonna get you out of there.
We are taking back our schools. Go out there and fight for something better.
You have to find a teacher who has the same ideas you do.
We're gonna try something new. We're gonna work a little harder, me included.
You wanna take over this school with me?
You think that's dumb?
I think it's a knockout.
There's drugs, there's gangs.
Change the school, you change the neighborhood.
You really think you could turn this around?
Can't say for certain.
100% yes.
I'm trying to explain to you why your kid's tanking.
I'll sell it to some other jerk.
Are you the one out there leading the charge?
I say you teach. You're really good at it.
You think this is a date?
No. Yeah, maybe.
What qualifies you to run a school?
If you're on campus, you will be arrested.
Your ideals, but Malia will suffer for them.
Don't use my daughter to scare me.
The petition will be denied. You think you got the
best in me? All out war is how we gotta look at it.
Under attack, we attack.
It's a feeding frenzy.
District offices all over the state are getting slammed with calls. This is not good. Baby, you
don't know me. We gotta be the change we wanna see. Makes us
stronger. Watching you reminded me of something I've been missing.
My mom used to say, what are you going to do with your one and only life?
Dare to read, speak, and write. Dare to think.
Won't back down.
Have
Have you heard about those mothers that lift one-ton trucks off their babies? They're nothing compared to me.
Well, there you have it. Seems like it's going to be a pretty good film. I think I'm going to head out, try to get out there tomorrow maybe and see this if it's showing here in the area. I wasn't able to look that up yet in order to find out if it is airing right here in the upstate of South Carolina, but I imagine it is. Again, the name of the film is called Won't Back Down, and it starts in theaters tomorrow, September 28th. And so you can go out there in order to find out more about this film. I mentioned that they have a website, and in that on that website, it says that it has a toolkit associated with it. So it's more than just a film. It's kind of a movement, really, that is taking place. And they provide you with tools out there, for instance, ways that you can upload it to your Facebook page. It actually has a, you can print off a mini poster out there. It has ways for you to link to it on your personal blog or web pages. They have information for organizations if you wanted to sponsor some sort of a meeting. In fact, here it says, mobilizing members of your community and your organization's members to see the film is extremely helpful. In addition to spreading the word, you can work with our group sales department in order to organize a dedicated showing for your organizations. Things like PTA groups or community block groups, events. Even teachers groups. There may be some teachers who say, you know, I would really like to see this film flourish because I don't stand for what's taking place in the public school system. So there are some nonprofit member screenings that take place and even some church events. While this isn't a Christian film per se, as we think about Christian films, but it is a film that promotes, I think, an issue and a story and a way of fixing a problem with something that is taking place in our society that Christians could certainly get behind. You know, we're all about, as Christians, we're about accountability. That's the idea. There has got to be some level of accountability. And while I agree that the only measure of accountability for the teachers today, I don't know that just merely test scores is the only way to measure what is taking place. I think that there are many more problems that are involved here, and I don't mean to just gloss over those other problems. There are problems with parents and their involvement as well in the education of their children. Remember what the mandate is that is given to us in Deuteronomy chapter 6. We're told that we are to be accountable for our children and for their education and for their training. And while it's true that we can certainly delegate that to others in the school system, Christian schools and others, I'm not saying that everybody has to homeschool in order to, you know, really meet that requirement. I think that delegation is possible there. However, what you can't delegate is your responsibility to make sure that the education is going in a way that is pleasing before the Lord. And that's what we're advocating here. We're advocating that there has to be accountability, there has to be responsibility and accountability, and we need to find ways to do that. So we're always interested in finding ways to have better accountability and better responsibility for what we need to do. By the way, in that passage in Deuteronomy chapter 6, it's interesting that it talks about that these things must first impact the parents. It must be in their heart first. And then you go ahead and teach them unto your children as you walk by the way and as you sit down and so forth, as it mentions in that passage. So with that in mind, I hope that this was helpful for you, hearing some of these statistics today, that we would then do something about the problem that's at hand. This is the final broadcast for me this week. I end on Thursday, so I'd like to encourage you to go to church this Sunday. Also, remember this. Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free."
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life and Liberty Radio, Christian Talk 660, WLFJ Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson on AM 660, and also on FM 92.9.